This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. No, your radio is not broken. That is the sound of a toxic cane toad. Later this hour, we're going to talk about two different invasive species that are threatening pets and local wildlife, cane toads and Burmese pythons, which researchers say are threatening wading bird nests in Florida's Everglades. But first, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the number of confirmed cases of measles in the U.S. this year jumped by nearly 20% during the week ending on April 11th in what they're describing as the country's second worst outbreak in nearly two decades. As of April 11th, the CDC recorded 555 measles cases since the beginning of the year in 20 states, including here in Florida. The measles virus is highly contagious and can lead to complications and death, particularly in children. Health officials say the U.S. outbreak is part of a worldwide rise. The World Health Organization reported on Monday that global cases had risen nearly fourfold in the first quarter of 2019 versus the same period last year. But how quickly could the disease spread if vaccination rates were to drop from where they currently are? A new interactive map shows what would happen if vaccination rates dropped by only 15%. Today we're talking with the two researchers behind the new measles outbreak map. Dr. Karen Liller is a professor and director of the Activist Lab in the College of Public Health at the University of South Florida. Dr. Liller, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're also talking with Dr. Mark Roberts. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. He's also a professor of medicine, clinical and translational science, and industrial engineering at the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Roberts, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having us.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Liller, I'll start with you. How long has this online simulator been active online?
Well, and that question also might be better for Dr. Roberts since their team actually developed the simulator. But we've had access to it now, I guess, for a few weeks in terms of the Florida measles cases. But they have done a variety of other diseases and have worked with other groups as well on simulations.
Dr. Roberts, tell me about this simulator. This one is for measles, and Dr. Liller was just saying that you've done this with other kinds of diseases. Does measles operate in the same way as other diseases?
It does. We have developed a large-scale, what's called an agent-based simulation model of actually the entire United States, which locates essentially every person in every household, every school and workplace in the country. And for diseases that are spread by proximity, meaning that you have to be close to somebody or touch somebody to be able to pass that disease on, it's been a really good modeling tool. We've been funded for many, many years by the NIH to build simulation models of infectious diseases. And usually we had been doing influenza and other dengue and other diseases like that. But after the 2014-2015 measles epidemic in Disneyland, our dean, Don Burke, had decided that we should convert our modeling tool to a tool that could model the transmission of measles. And we created for every county in the United States a measles simulator that would say what would happen if only 80% of the kids who should be vaccinated against measles are, and compared that to a map of what would happen if 95% of the people of kids who should be vaccinated against measles are. And you see tremendous variability in the number of cases of measles that occur in those situations. We were then asked by several states to do more specific representations for their state where they had the actual vaccination rates of the individual schools, and we didn't just have to assume it was a particular level. And we did that first in Texas, and then Karen Liller's group asked us to do it in Florida and connected us with the appropriate data sources so that we could get the actual either district level or school level data on vaccination rates and exemptions.
How different were the assumed vaccination rates and the actual vaccination rates?
They're quite different in many parts of the country. When we didn't have any data, what we were trying to do was just demonstrate how important and powerful herd immunity is in these infectious diseases. So we picked a particularly low level, 80%, and a normal, relatively high level, 95%. When we looked at the actual data from either Texas or Florida, what you find is there's tremendous variability in the vaccination rates by different schools. There were schools in Texas that had vaccination rates under 40% and schools that had vaccination rates in the high 90%. So you get tremendous variability in how many people are vaccinated. And for us, it makes a much more robust and useful simulation if we know the actual rates of vaccination in various different counties and school districts and schools.
And I would think that that type of variation might bolster the argument towards herd immunity if there are that many unvaccinated kids out there.
Well, it actually, having unvaccinated kids damages herd immunity.
Well, I mean, it would make the argument towards trying to achieve herd immunity, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
No, that's yes. I may not have stated it right either.
The fact that there is such tremendous variability by different schools and different districts means that there will be pockets of infection and pockets of people and children who can get really quite seriously affected by an introduction. And it can spread remarkably rapidly in some of those environments.
And Doctor,
as we have seen in lots of states these days.
Well, yeah, it's shocking. We're currently in a measles outbreak right now. Does this seem to match what your simulator would indicate, this type of an outbreak, given...
Well, it does in some sense. Dr. Lilla can speak more about the specifics in Florida, but what we have, when we run the simulation, we run those simulations hundreds of times for each county and each city. And what you see is a distribution. Sometimes we randomly throw a case of measles into the city and not much happens. Sometimes you throw it in and you get thousands of cases just because of the statistical variation of who that particular person who's infected touches. And what we've seen is that the vaccination rates in most parts of Florida and most parts of Texas, the actual vaccination rates, average in the middle 90s, which means that you get relatively high herd immunity rates. But there are many places where that vaccination rate is much lower. And if by chance one of those places gets infected, it has a tremendous potential to spread this disease.
And Dr. Liller, I want to turn to you and look at Florida more specifically. Are there parts of Florida where you can see, I mean, is this kind of a socioeconomic thing where you're seeing less vaccination or more vaccination?
You know, as we're looking at the data, there really doesn't seem to be a consistent area or part of the state. We're seeing this sporadically, you know, throughout the state where, as Dr. Roberts said, you will see areas that have very low rates, and then you'll see other areas that have very high rates. So what's interesting about the simulator is that people can go to it, though, and they can put that information in and actually pull up their city or their county and to see how rapidly it, you know, and how rapidly it spreads. I think what's also so great about this simulator is that it's such a visual representation of what can happen. And when we talk about numbers, you know, we talk about numbers quadrupling or the number of cases doubling and that, people hear that information and I often hear, well, you know, that's, how bad is that? How serious is that? You can't really get a grasp on it. But what's good about the simulation is that it's such a visual representation of what can happen. And when you see that, in our simulation, what we did is Dr. Roberts looked at our current vaccination rate, and this is the average vaccination rate of the seventh graders in schools. And then he looked at it, what would happen if we reduce that rate by 10%? And when you look at that, it is amazing because you'll see some cases happening now and then just drop it 10% and see it, in some of the areas the cases explode. And you can also see it happening day by day by day by day. I think the simulation takes you through like 266 or some days.
Exactly, it does. And I've read a lot about people's ability to comprehend numbers, and they get to a certain level in the spoken number, and it's just hard to wrap your perception around it. But like you say, that visualization of the little dots on the map is just staggering, and you just kind of have to see it to really appreciate it. I ran a test for Cape Coral, and after the 266 days, it showed 15 cases under current rates, and then 8,814 under 10% lower vaccination rate. I mean, that's a staggering number of people who would be infected by measles. And measles is not just like a little rash.
No, measles can be so deadly, and measles spread so rapidly. And it's just, it doesn't even matter. Some people said, well, you know, this depends on the population, obviously, of the county. Well, sure it does. But the thing about measles, it just spreads so easily, you know, whether it's through contact with the virus or through respiratory droplets. I mean, it just spreads so easily that you don't need a lot of people in a county to have a terrible situation, right? Because it's so easily caught by individuals. And so that's the other thing. People, as you say, think measles is just a simple rash and it goes away, and quite the opposite. It can be very serious.
Yeah. Listeners, if you're just joining the show right now, I'm talking with Dr. Mark Roberts. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School in Public Health, also professor of medicine, clinical and translational science and industrial engineering at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm also talking with Dr. Karen Liller. She is a professor and director of the Activist Lab in the College of Public Health at the University of South Florida. They're the researchers that are behind a new interactive measles outbreak map that shows how quickly the disease can spread if vaccination rates decline. If you'd like to ask them a question, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. Dr. Roberts, I wanted to ask you, you've done a number of these maps that kind of project what would happen with the spread of diseases. When you first started doing this type of research and mapping and projecting, did you ever anticipate that you would be doing something on measles?
No, we didn't actually. And it was actually, in my opinion, it was the foresight of our dean who developed the Public Health Dynamics Laboratory, which I now direct, who sort of said, look, this is what we should do, and we should be producing policy-related tools that people can actually see what would happen under different conditions. And that's what prompted us to create, for the lab to create the Fred Measles application. And it's been incredibly widely used by both people in legislatures. In the California legislature, one of the California legislators showed each legislator in the state legislature in California, their county at 80% and their county at 95% when he introduced legislation to reduce exemptions. And so I think that we have believed here for a long time that we need to have science be described to people in ways they can understand it, and to describe the results of science in a way that people can understand and are visually useful.
Yeah, the visual usefulness is huge.
The
visual
thing that
is
I
great.
Think is useful is that, yeah, the graphs we show also represent that not having herd immunity does not only hurt or harm the people who choose not to be vaccinated. There are, in every population, there will be a couple of percent of people who can't be vaccinated because of a disease or a condition, and then there'll be another couple of percent of people, anywhere between 1 and 3% of children who will get vaccinated, and the vaccine won't work. It won't produce immune levels of antibody. And so there'll be somewhere on the order of 2 to 5, sometimes 6, but a few percent of people who, even though they're vaccinated, they are at risk. And we graph that. We show how many people who we call bystanders get infected in an epidemic and how many people who were what we called refusers who get infected. And what you see is that for some epidemics and for some cases, it's just as many bystanders who get hurt as people who simply refuse to be vaccinated. So the problem is, failing to vaccinate your children doesn't only put your child at risk, it puts other children at risk.
And that's an interesting part of the argument, which is that the responsibility of the individual towards the community as a whole. And that's been one of the touchy subjects that people have a hard time dancing around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I could just say in public health, that's just so important, though, that we really take a look at health in much more than just individual cases, but we look at it more fully in a much more holistic manner. And I think this is a great example of showing how important it is, as Dr. Roberts said, that you vaccinate your child not only for you but for your child and your family, but also for the entire community.
I wanted to ask both of you, is this outbreak of measles and the, well, the outbreaks that we've seen since the 90s, I guess it is, or the early 2000s, is this the fault of information that had gotten out saying that vaccinations are the cause of other illnesses? Is well, that why people are not vaccinating their kids? Is that what we're blaming it on?
I think it's a little hard to, I mean, I can certainly say that these episodes and these epidemics that we've been having in multiple states and multiple parts of the country are certainly the result of decreasing vaccination rates. I don't want to absolutely infer that the reason for everybody choosing not to vaccinate their children is false information, but the fact that people are not vaccinating their children is what is causing these epidemics. So, I mean, the second half of that is absolutely true. Whether or not it's because of the information that's coming out about these other things, I don't know. I think that much of that information, you can see it on Facebook all the time, you can see it on YouTube all the time. It's pervasive, that kind of information about the dangers of vaccination. I don't know that that's the only reason that people are not vaccinating their children, but it's the fact that people are not vaccinating their children that is allowing these epidemics to reoccur. We should not have a single case of measles in the United States ever again. It's a completely preventable disease, and it kills one out of every 1,000 children who get it. And we just shouldn't be doing that.
And I'm wondering,
it was eradicated in 2000.
Yeah, I mean,
And for this to be happening, you know, as Dr. Roberts said, I mean, it absolutely should not be happening. We shouldn't be having this conversation today.
And I'm wondering then, what direction are we heading in right now? Are we heading towards higher vaccination rates? Have we? I don't want to say hit bottom, but have we gotten to the point where people are turning around their thought processes? Are we seeing vaccination rates increasing at this point, or are we seeing the results of it having decreased before?
Karen may know a lot more about that in Florida specifically. We have evidence from other states. So in California particularly, in 2015, when California reduced many of the allowable exemptions for sending your kid to public school with not being vaccinated, they saw profound increases in vaccination rates in California. And so, I mean, this is a legally mandated thing in most states, and the ability to get a vaccine exemption is determined by states. And so different states have different beliefs and strengths about how they balance out the community good versus the rights of the individual or rights of the parent. So it's different in all different states. We would like to do this kind of state-specific model for every state in the United States. We don't have the data to do that yet. We don't have the specific vaccination rates by school in every state. But if we did, we could create such simulation tools for anybody.
Dr. Liller, how are vaccination rates going in the state of Florida at this point? Are they still declining or are they going back up?
Oh, what we're seeing, the rate is interesting. There's been about a 375% percentage increase in religious exemptions that have been granted in Florida for the vaccine between 2011 and 2018. That's a huge increase. It's gone from about 6,500 kids to over 25,000. The religious exemption issue in the state of Florida, it is very easy to get. It is a form that essentially people check off, and they pretty much get the exemption. Of course, we always have to maintain medical exemptions because there are, of course, reasons why someone should not be immunized. Could be an immunocompromised individual, or it could be just they're not old enough to get the immunization, or et cetera. But what we have noticed has been this huge increase in these religious exemptions. And so that's certainly something that we are looking at. And as I said, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what's going on, but we do see an increase there. And we do see the anti-vaccination movement, as Dr. Roberts said, it's quite pervasive. You can just go to any social media site and put it in and get much information about that. What I can tell you is that, you know, in public health, vaccines, they're one of our greatest public health achievements. I can tell you that they're safe, and the information that was said about vaccines and autism has totally been debunked. So the problem is when information gets out in social media, it's hard to it's hard to ignore it. It doesn't go away, and it starts to spread and spread and spread.
Yeah.
But I just think it's a time for people to really seriously think about what they're doing in terms of if they don't have children immunized or even immunizations that should be taking place as adolescents and adults. I mean, I think they really need to think about not only themselves, but also, like we said, the entire public health community.
And
because the cases continue to grow like this, and if we continue to see, as we simulate here in this simulation, just a drop of 10% where you're losing herd immunity, it could be totally, you know, destructive for the public health system in trying to respond to all those cases.
And I'm wondering, because this is measles, but is the measles vaccination, is that the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella?
Yeah, it's the MMR.
Are we seeing any mumps and rubella?
I don't think we're seeing the number of cases of rubella as much. I think we have seen a slight increase, and Dr. Roberts may know more about that too, but also we've not seen mumps, though, I don't believe, increase. But again, they're different virus, you know, they're different.
Difference in different ways to spread it.
They're different diseases, yes. Measles spreads very,
right.
very.
Right, and just. Yeah, measles spreads very easily. There's a number in infectious disease called R naught. It's the basic what's called the basic reproductive number, and what it indicates is it tells the number of people in an unprotected population. So if you drop the case of a disease into an unprotected population, a population that didn't have any innate immunity, how many people would you expect each infected person to then infect as they went around? And measles is one of the most infectious. It has an R-naught of 16, which means that every infected child in an unprotected population could infect as many as 16 other people. Mumps is about 4, I think, somewhere around in there. 3. No, it's a little higher. I think it's 5 or 6. But it's a much less infectious disease. I mean, it's smaller than measles.
And I'm wondering, for comparison, what is the, do you know the common cold? Like coronavirus? I'm just curious.
Off the top of my head, I don't, but it's easy to find out.
Yeah, I would imagine it. It sounds like it's about as easy to get as a cold. Is there another thing that you're looking towards as far as needing to map out that we thought was gone after measles?
You mean other diseases?
Yeah, is there another disease that you anticipate with, I'm thinking like whooping cough, things like that, that people are not vaccinating against?
We could. We have not thought about that. We're actually using our modeling tools to look at the spread of several things, opioid use addiction, HIV, hepatitis C, those kinds of things. But we could look at the platform we built is quite flexible, and we could put virtually any disease you wanted into it as long as we had information about how the disease spread.
Well, it's incredibly interesting. You know, I spent a lot of time clicking around on it before I came on the show. I think it's just really amazing work. And if any of our listeners are interested in checking that out, we do have a link to that that interactive map on gulfcoastlive.org, where you can check where you're from and what the measles projections look like. That's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest, Dr. Karen Liller from the University of Florida. Thank you so much for your time. And Dr. Mark Roberts with the University of Pittsburgh, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
When we return, researchers say invasive Burmese pythons are threatening wading birds' nests in the Florida Everglades. We'll meet a University of Florida graduate student who, along with other researchers, used a genetic tool to test for python DNA on tree islands. We'll find out what she discovered. I'm Julie Glenn. You're listening to the Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.